The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM, and it's great to be in for Dory, as always, although I'm sad for Dory's illness. It's never great to feel not great around the holidays. He's too busy anyway.
Needed some rest. So I told him just, no need to come in on Friday. Just continue rest.
Feeling better today, just resting?
I hope so.
Because usually people tell you when you're sick, hey, why don't you just rest? Like, well, it's because I'm writhing with a fever and vomiting or whatever, And so it's not a restful time while you're, where you're supposedly resting.
Right. Now I hope he's on the upswing and should be back on Monday.
It's like a recovery day then. Well, that's a plus.
I hope so. Yeah. Yes.
Good. Glad to hear it. But on my way in, I was reminded of this particular, we've got yet another sad night in Seattle where police are investigating five separate shootings, one in which a teen was hurt, a teenage girl. And, we have the usual kind of, well, we're investigating this. It could be a mystery. And then you think to yourself, do we prosecute criminals in Seattle anymore? I have more hope now that we didn't elect the nut job who decided it was a good idea to support the abolition of police and encourage the destruction of property. But if you don't prosecute people who are doing bad things on a regular basis, what do you think that they're going to keep doing? And if you've got drug use that's rampant, and you're saying, well, we're not going to prosecute these small things. In fact, we're just going to legalize all kinds of different things here. But some of the worst people in the world are behind the suppliers of this stuff. And once people are addicted, they can't pay for it, right? But they'll do anything for it because they're addicted to it. They got to get that fixed. So they're going to go and do these petty crimes. They're going to get involved with people who are more seriously criminal. And there's going to be violence as people try to take one thing from another. And there's going to be shootings and murders and whatnot. I mean, how can you – you can't even drive into Seattle without knowing that, right? You drive into Seattle, what do you see? Trash everywhere. Used to be the Emerald City, clean, sparkly. People would talk about how beautiful it was. And this is nothing new to anybody who lives around here. The only thing that's different is if you're outside of Seattle for, say, a month, and then you drive in again, then there's usually this situation where you feel like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe how awful it has become. And then you think it's worse than ever. So we have Thursday, police called for gunfire around Garfield High School, probably a gun-free zone, by the way. So it's shocking that we'd have a shooting near the high school anyway, right? Around 8:15 p.m., police received a call from a motorist saying a suspect had fired a gun at them from a black sedan in a road rage incident. At 9 p.m., police received a report of a shooting on 3rd Avenue and Pike. When police arrived, the victim was gone, but a 29-year-old man arrived at Harborview with injuries. And then around 9:15, a passenger in a gray sedan opened fire on another near Rainier Beach. And this is in addition to the reported 9:30 a.m. attack, which left a teenage girl injured. Once again, you ask yourself, one, why is a 15-year-old girl hanging around at 3:30 a.m., right? What's going on there? What's going on? Who's she with? Why is there this activity? Some of this road rage stuff, you think, people are less social now. People are angry. I mean, just setting aside the general criminal element that we now tolerate and in some ways encourage in Seattle, there's also, for the rest of us who might have been doing okay, some of us might have been on the edge, but hey, you know what? In a normal situation, they'd be okay. There seems to be people seem to be stretched a bit thin. I was at the grocery store the other day putting my one-year-old daughter in the car. So I've got the big car seat. I put her in the car, in the van. And this car pulls up, and I just get the door shut, the sliding door of the van. It's just shutting. And there's a car that comes up, and I saw him roll up to the parking spot getting ready to turn in. Well, of course, my door is open. I reach in my pocket to grab my keys because I don't have my keys out because I'm carrying the kid. And he starts honking. And
oh my,
yeah, he's honking, and then there's the spot that's empty next
to my ears.
Yeah, there's a spot empty next to my car, and there's also a spot empty next to that. So all he had to do was pull around to the empty spot. But no, he thought, it's much better to honk at the guy who's trying to put the 1-year-old in the car, and then swear at me when he gets out. And I will tell you, it was a fortunate thing that I'd cleared the car out of all diapers and gooey things, because his car would have been, had a holiday decoration he would not soon have forgotten.
I think that's unfortunate.
It's unfortunate for my heart, because there was a lot of, you know, unreleased fury going on. But still, I thought to myself, I look at this and I think, what is wrong with people? Because I've had not things exactly like that, but, you know, the whole cutoffs and weird stuff. So this is kind of happening around, and we got, you know, a violent attitude and a decay in just general civility going on, in addition to an embrace of criminality. So, you know, will it get better? Let's hope so. Tis the season, as they say. Next up.
The Big Lead Update.
Governor Inslee is considering a lot of things these days. For example, he's considering the Omicron variant of COVID.
So we will be active no matter what the science tells us.
Always. That fills me with confidence with the governor. And that's, by the way, one statement I actually believe from him.
Yeah, follow the science wherever I want it to go.
I will follow the science no matter what. I'm going to stay active regardless of whatever the science says, because I'm going to twist it around to say whatever I want it to say.
So we will be active no matter what the science tells us.
And, of course, a quick reminder, the governor did, you know, if you want to calm down, you're worried about getting Christmas presents, makes you feel stressed out, you know, you haven't done your shopping yet, you're afraid to go out because the evil Omicron variant out there. I saw somebody on social media say it sounds like a villain in a Transformers movie.
It does.
Which I totally agree with.
It's Kron awesome. Part.
What if they just called it the Sniffles variant? You know what I mean? Because so far it's basically right. not a problem anywhere. It's like if you – and by the way, I keep wondering, if you got this variant that's basically the Sniffles, would it increase your antibodies for the other variants that are more dangerous, right? I mean, I don't know the answer to that, but I think it's worth –
I think that's probably the case.
No, it's worth exploring. It makes sense to me, right. You know, based on wherever the science goes here, I'm going to be active on that.
So we will be active no matter what the science tells us.
So, you know, I'm just saying it's possible, right? If it is, then instead of calling it the Omicron, just call it the Sniffle variant. And then, you know, I would think that then exposure would not be the great fear. It would actually be a plus in many ways. Anyway, setting that scary scenario to the side. You know, if you are worried and you are stressed out about the holidays and you do need to take a break, the governor did provide, you know, that brief advice.
The best holiday gift you can give this holiday season, if you have that tradition, is to get a loved one, get vaccinated, and to be common sense on how we use masks, which we know continue to be very, very effective.
So there's absolutely nothing in the world, nothing that would cause your family more joy and safety than this. You know, keep in mind, we're at about 80%, so you really got to kind of look around to find which family member's not vaccinated. And then I would think that you would want to figure out if there is, you know, various problems with their health or something that might make them more susceptible before they really got excited about this. And it's free. So also they're going to be saying, yeah, so you're giving me a free thing here?
I mean, right. Yeah. Unwrap a needle.
But if you convince someone who, by the way, at this point, in order to convince someone, you have to say, you almost have to be super annoying, right? I mean, if you're going to try and convince them to get vaccinated at this point when it's free at the store, well, there's that
it's
lottery
not really
kind of
free. We're
thing.
All paying for it, right?
Well, free as in getting third. Great point, Nicole. Free as in getting other people to pay for it, you know, and you have various lottery kind of things where you can win various items, you know, if you get the vaccine, and that didn't work, and you have people getting fired from their jobs, including people who, by the way, worked very hard for a year with no sign of a vaccine, who risked their lives when they didn't know exactly how deadly the virus was and other things, including those people who are now told by they were heroes last year, zeros this year. You know, get rid of them. They're fired. So it's the best holiday gift of the year. You can just imagine how easy it would be to convince somebody. In fact, I think one of the best ways to convince people is to shut up, right? Stop it with the whole, you know, the weird looking, reminds me of the John Carpenter movie, They Live, kind of billboards that you see about getting vaccinated and how healthy it's going to be. It's, I don't know if you're familiar with that movie. It's a bad movie, but it's got some great scenes in it. It's kind of iconic. but the billboards are all subliminal and they say obey, you know, and people don't know that that's what they're telling them because you have to have special glasses. But
if you're not vaccinated at this point, the only thing that's going to make you get vaccinated is truth and honesty about the vaccine.
But the more people tell you, you have to, you're going to be forced to. We're going to shut you down.
That's not going to work.
Right. We're going to take away your employment. We're going to, all that stuff just reeks of, hey, you know what? I want to destroy you and your family unless you do what I say. That just automatically is going to get the gander up. You know, I mean, it's willfully stupid, I think. Anyway, back to the point. That's kind of reliving Inslee's statements of yesterday. He also made this important news announcement that he's open to a pause in the Long-Term Care Act, which is another way of saying the long-term care tax that you're going to feel on your paycheck at about 58 cents per $100 that you collect starting in January. And some state, the leadership of the state Democrats in the Senate sent him a letter saying they want this thing delayed.
I do not have the authority to make some unilateral decision like
that. I want to pause right there because that was the most refreshing sentence I've heard, or clause I've heard from the governor in a long time. Because on nothing else, I mean, the guy banned fishing for crying out loud, right? Just unilaterally said, you know what? We got this deadly virus out, and it's a danger for people to really be close together. So I'm going to ban an outdoor activity where people are spread apart, you know, by vast distances in the middle of nature. So there's that. He's done what? He made various vax mandates, also unilateral decision. He's got extended emergency powers forever because the legislature hasn't asserted themselves to remind people to return to normal democracy. And I say this because it's great for executives to have emergency powers when something happens suddenly because decisions have to be made, actions have to be taken, and you can't get the legislative body together that the people have elected to represent them. But in our current situation, we have a never-ending – the governor gets to decide when there's an emergency and when it ends. So it never ends, you know, and legislators have to assert their own authority again because they weren't – There was no vision for an emergency lasting forever. The assumption was it lasts for a certain amount of time, then you come back. Most states are like 60 days. You know, and by the way, it doesn't matter if you're a red state, blue state, or whatever. It doesn't even matter if you agree with the governor, don't agree with the governor on every position. What matters is you want to return to a system of representative government so that big policies that have trade-offs and make large impacts on people's lives – that you, the people, have a say in them through your elected representatives. You know, right now we really don't have that. So, you know, we've got, you know, restricted travel. We've got the closure of businesses. But right now he's saying when it comes to this new tax, he refreshingly says, I don't have the authority to do this.
That it would take some action by the legislature. But I am sensitive and empathetic to the need some changes in this bill. And so I am talking to legislators about other approaches that could allow them to pause, if you will, some of the actions to allow them to make refinements to the bill. So I am talking to them about other options to be able to accomplish that end. And I think those may be possible.
Let me pause right there. This is basically the way he's nuanced his words there of other options. He doesn't want to say pause. He doesn't want to say put a stop to it. Because one, it's the kind of thing where forcing people to buy things is very popular among a certain ideological crowd, you know. And in this case, it's a long-term care insurance. They ignore things like, well, some people might need it, some people might not. Some people have invested, say, in houses or other properties to pay for them their care long-term in some way. I do think it's a great thing to promote long-term care planning. I think that that's important and healthy, and there should be more of that. And if there's a silver lining to this tax, that's what it is. But I also think it's ridiculous to force people to have a new tax for a benefit that's not going to cover it, what your needs are if you do have a problem. And it doesn't take into account that people plan for things in different ways, you know. Anyway, so he doesn't want to say the word repeal, But about, what is it, 400 and some odd thousand, 450,000 people have opted out of this thing. I could be wrong, but that's a number that's popping in my head. Then again, my kids were sick last night, and I was awake most of the night. So that's the number that's popping in my head. I'm not guaranteeing it, but there's a whole lot of people opting out and a whole lot more people who wanted to opt out, myself included. I didn't get to opt out because I just didn't have time to opt out. And the one time I did make a call, I couldn't get a plan. So, you know, there's
I did. Barely.
Good for you.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who wanted to opt out.
But now, if it gets repealed or it doesn't happen, I'm like, well, shoot.
Yeah. No, I mean, for me, I purposely bought various – I've got insurance. I increased my 401k contributions because I thought, well, if something happened to me when I'm old, I want to be able to pay for this. You know, things like that. So it's not like it wasn't something that I was thinking of, but mm-hmm. at the same time, I didn't necessarily think that particular, you know.
Right.
Also, you know, I don't know. There's something about long-term care that bothers me on the thought of it. But anyway, but the fact is people pay for this in different ways, and the number of people who opted out is not the number of people who want to opt out. There's a lot more than that. So the unpopularity of this tax is very clear to them.
Special session to have them come in and do this because it starts January 1st before they can.
That would be one possibility, but there is another app we are pursuing. I won't go into all the technicalities of it. That would basically pause the collection of any taxes associated with this while the legislature makes these refinements. And we're exploring that with legislators as we speak.
Why don't explore the repeal? So you're going to tax a bunch of people who can't get the benefit. You're taxing people out of state who will never get the benefit. If you retire out of state, you won't get the benefit. And by the way, take a look around you. Who could afford to retire in this state? Unless you already own your home, you know, free and clear, you're not... I mean, it's really difficult to afford things in the greater Puget Sound area, is it not? You know, so there's a lot of people who are going to be retiring out of this state at some point. I never dreamed of it. I never thought I would. I've always thought Washington's my home, you know, and I still do. But there is a part of me now that says, will I be able to live here my whole life? I don't know the answer to that question, you know. And maybe there's some of you who are thinking, well, thank God for that. But you know, just keep in mind, there's plenty of people across the spectrum that are feeling the same way, you know, that they're asking if they can. And so you'd end up paying this tax, you know, taking away, and 58 cents might not sound like much, but I'll tell you, we get nickel and dime to death and it adds up. So, you know, let's, instead of talking about how the legislature can refine things and, you know, fix a couple of these quirks, how about just taking a look and recognizing that the biggest problem with the bill was the bill itself? And the whole thing should be thrown out, should be repealed. And then tell people and use it as an opportunity to promote awareness so that people can plan for long-term care the way that they see fit for themselves. David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. And the critical race theory controversy continues not only around the country, but here in Washington State as well. And it's taken a lot more attention after the shellacking critical race theory got in Virginia, widely attributed to giving Republicans control of what had been a Democrat-leaning state for the last 8 years or so. On the line with us is the director for the Center for Education, Lee Finna, with Washington Policy Center, a colleague of mine in my usual job. Lee, always great to talk to you.
Great to be with you today, Dave. Thanks.
Yeah. Now, originally we had you on the show to talk about a blog that you posted regarding how it's possible that some teachers are backing away from public schools and just leaving it entirely because of the critical race theory. But before we get into that, I want to talk about your new blog regarding the State Board of Education consultant saying that the purpose of ethnic studies and critical race theory curriculum is to destabilize and tear down the current the current curriculum of the public education system. You know, where did you hear that? And tell us about what she was saying.
Well, it was just astonishing to hear this. Yesterday, the State Board of Education had a hearing to discuss their plan to require ethnic studies as a graduation requirement. And before I had a chance to testify, they had their consultants, a young woman who is a graduate student, speak about her paper that she had submitted to the state board, the ethnic studies concept. And in her she presented this paper to the board, and she went through the pages in this paper, and she made these statements that the purpose of ethnic studies is to destabilize the system of oppression that is the public school curriculum. And so I was actually gratified to see that she was so honest and candid about what their goals are. She's a young woman. She probably didn't really understand that to be saying this to the State Board of Education, which is charged with the duty to protect and maintain high standards, the academic rigor of our reading, math, science standards, puts them in a terrible position because here is someone that they've hired to guide them through this ethnic studies curriculum, which is actually critical race theory in disguise. It's not ethnic studies by any meaning of the term. Ethnic studies has now become critical race theory, and they're doing this in any number of ways: diversity, equity, and inclusion curriculum, social and emotional learning curriculum, culturally responsive curriculum. It's all the same stuff. It's critical race theory. It teaches that white people are oppressors and black and brown people are oppressed and can't get ahead in our society. And this is what they're trying to put in the public schools. And I'm very concerned about the damage this will cause to our students and to the content knowledge that is now going to be pushed out of the classrooms in the subjects that children need to learn. You know, they need to learn how to read. They need to learn how to do math. They need to learn history, accurate history. They need to learn science. And now instead, precious class time is going to be spent on teaching this false ideology full of falsehoods. And it's an ideology. It's a radical ideology from socialist professors in the university. And, so I testified against it. I'm hoping that the legislature will repeal Senate Bill 5044, which is the bill that they passed last session and the governor signed that created the critical race theory mandate training of our public school employees. And that is what has given great energy to this, to consultants like this hired by the State Board of Education.
I'm curious, did anyone, because this is not, I know that some of the response to criticism of critical race theory has been, well, hey, you just don't want to have accurate history told or tell about some of the sins of America's past. And I've pointed out before many times that there have been changes to curriculum over the last 40 years to do a better job with that. So, with this Board of Education, I would take it that they've reviewed some of the stuff in the past, that they've made claims to improve curriculum. So I'm wondering, did anyone respond to the idea that the entire curriculum needs to be torn down because it's oppressive? Because most of these people have been, in the positions of power in the public education system for a long period of time. So if all of this was so bad and so awful and so destructive, then you kind of wonder, why are any of them still employed there? If you're going to treat it as accurate, they should just leave, put somebody else in charge.
Well, it's absurd. That argument is another falsehood that they employ. People that oppose critical race theory want our full history to be told, all the warts and bad things that happened, but then all the good things that happened as well. Okay, of course we want the full teaching of our history, of the Civil War, of our founding, of our Civil War, of our Jim Crow laws, and then our civil rights laws that ended racial discrimination in our country, and the great progress that black and brown people have made in our country, and how they've achieved the American dream out of hard work and dedication to task. That is the American dream. It is real and alive, and these people are trying to kill that, and they're trying to destroy us from within. It's as simple as that. So it is a falsehood that we don't watch the full history of our past taught. It's just false, false, false. What they're doing is, and they're just trying to change the subject, you know, they don't want opponents to say what it really is. It is a, it comes from the concepts of critical race theory were brought to us by radical Marxists, the Frankfurt School that from Germany that came here after the war, and they brought to the universities these concepts. And instead, it's basically Marxism. Instead of the class struggle, they're making it a race struggle. And so who cares about all that? What's happening in the classroom is that children are now being taught that their color of their skin and their sexual identity is more important than anything else. Their individual humanity is irrelevant to whether they're black, brown, white, Asian, or whatever. And it's a huge dehumanization of our children and very harmful. And in addition to that, it's hurting what they're going to be learning in the schools, and it's causing all kinds of dislocation already. I mean, I can you imagine teaching a bunch of high school kids that the white ones are bad and the black and brown ones are oppressed by the white ones? I mean, this is harmful and divisive, and it needs to be ended before we have kids beating each other up in the classroom. I mean, I've heard of two schools going on lockdown this week. I wonder if there's any connection to this. Okay. This is dangerous. We need to stop it. We need to tell everybody about it. The people, you know, have to recognize this is happening in the schools, not get put on these side debates. It's talk to the teachers in your classrooms. You know, this is happening. I sound like Cassandra, but it's true. You know, this is true. What's happening. And
where are they going to put biracial kids and multiracial kids and Asian kids? And, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of problems with how this, and you end up, ideas tend to have short and long-term consequences over time, and resentment politics never plays out well for people,
right.
For the people that, you know, are being taught that resentment is the ideal.
Lee, yes.
Appreciate it. We'll have people focus on your blog at washingtonpolicy.org. They can read, and you can actually see the letter, or the ethnic studies concept paper from the state board consultant there. You've got a link up on your site there at washingtonpolicy.org. Lee Finna, thanks so much for the time.
Oh, thank you.
You bet. David Bowe's in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. David Bowe's in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. And I was going to call him Vice President Biden. Talk about bad habits, you know.
Wow.
President Biden. But sometimes Biden probably calls himself Vice President Biden, judging from his performance thus far. I'm sure the Vice President would wish he was Vice President Biden. Anyway, the President Biden was here to give us all a little assurance on the economic numbers, the wonderful, record-breaking, just best ever, awesome economic numbers, even though fewer jobs were created than were expected.
Tax cuts and raising wages for middle-class families mean that Americans, on average, have more in their pockets today than they did each month since we've been in office. Than they did last year after accounting for inflation.
So thanks to the Biden administration, everybody's flush with more. It's a strange thing because I don't know anyone who feels that way unless they've had some kind of remarkable individual success in their life. Like, you know, they've got, I don't know anyone who started a new company of late, but I suppose it's possible. Or, you know, most people I know are like, when I fill up my gas tank, I get depressed because it's so expensive. And I'm wondering, if it gets much further, will I be able to afford to visit my family? Will I be able to afford to commute to work? That's the impression I get. Or you know,
unless
we hear
you're a mortgage broker or a real estate agent. They're
great
doing
point.
They're doing very well.
Yes. Realtors and mortgage brokers are like, you know what? You know, the times they're a roaring here, you know. I'll sell your house for only 3%. And and that 3% is a lot of money these days. So they're doing well. Everybody else, it's like, whoa, prices are high. You go in to buy beef at the grocery store, you're like, let's see. I used to pay that when I went to Ruth's Chris and had it cooked for me with and it was sizzling on a plate on a special occasion and I had side dishes. Now, you know, it's like sirloin tip for filet mignon prices. Not great. I don't even know how we can afford to make hamburger anymore. I'd be looking at that chunk, you know, the little stew chunk and going, you know what? That's part of a steak. That's probably $5 right there. You know, it's ridiculous. And yet for Biden, we have more money in our pockets than last year. Which is, you know, saying something since the government had a shutdown last year, right? You know, I mean, the comparison's so idiotic. Well, we had these mandatory shutdowns last year and we had record numbers of people on unemployment. And now that a lot of that's gone, we have more people with more money in their pockets. Well, great. You know, it's like if you're drowning, you know, and you're under 10 feet of water, but now you're drowning and you're under an inch of water. It's still not great news. You know what I mean? Not a great position to be in. Then Biden reassured us about the problem with getting the shelves stocked.
The point is that the vast majority of the shelves are filled, and the CEOs of not only the suppliers, but the CEOs of UPS and FedEx, which are on track to deliver more packages than ever, are saying the same thing. So we're heading into holiday season in strong shape.
So the shelves are stocked. There's no supply chain problem now because the shelves are stocked. Here's what you do when you don't have what you want on the shelf. You just put other things on the shelf, you know, or you – like we used to do this when I was working in retail. You know, when you sold out of an item and you had the crap item that nobody actually wanted, you know, or a lesser item that people would take as a substitute but only if they had to – if you ran out of the one item, you just increase the spread of the other item available, right? Because you don't want empty shelves. That looks bad. We've had enough of that in 2020 when the number one product of the year was, you know, the greatest gift was toilet paper. Now there are, you know, issues with the supply chain, but apparently as long as the stores have something on their shelves, things are good. There's no real problem there. And then I also like how it's they're shipping more packages than ever. That is not a real – that has no bearing on reality when we have more people shopping online than ever before. And everything you buy online has to be shipped to you, right? And we have a COVID pandemic going on that has a big chunk of the country overly panicked about. And I say this by, you know, there's a partisan divide among the perception of COVID. People on the left tend to look at COVID as vastly more deadly than the science says. And people on the right – tend to not like the vaccine more, and they dismiss certain things about COVID. So there's this trade-off here. But there's a lot of uncertainty and fear, and part of it's our media. You know, they've done surveys of how the media internationally treats COVID, and U.S. media is overwhelmingly negative compared to the rest of the world where there's a better balance. So they got people scared. People aren't going out as much. And, of course, there's going to be more packages shipped by FedEx than ever because everyone's shopping on Amazon, you know. And I know what you're thinking about Biden, you know, and that the sound of his voice.
Wait.
When I first heard that, I thought it was slowed down. What?
Yeah, we'll tease it for the next segment.
All right. So I'll explain why he sounded like the most interesting man in the world.
Yeah.
Although his words didn't, but his voice did. Coming up, David Bowes in for Dory Monson.